Welcome back to Beyond Classified. I'm Chris Matthew. Today my guest is Barry Littleton. He was born awake with fragmented past life memories, and he began having paranormal experiences at a very young age. These experiences included telepathic awareness, seeing or feeling ghosts, and various inorganic beings. These encounters and some of the entities themselves had a distinct extraterrestrial origin. These unusual encounters led him to a lifetime of research and exploration into both the metaphysical and paranormal fields. For the last 22 years, he has worked with at-risk youth and juvenile offenders by utilizing the cognitive behavioral approach. He hopes to unite extraterrestrial contactees with similar encounters, interests, and cross the racial color barrier that seems to exist within the field. Since coming forward, he has had the pleasure of meeting awakened people from across the globe. Barry, welcome back, and how you doing?
I'm good, Chris. How are you doing? Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Yeah, man, it's great to talk to you again. It's been way too long. And man, I love having guests with experience like yourself, especially with such profound experiences, because it gives the audience an inside look at what occurs during some of these contact experiences. And over the past couple of years, it seems this topic has become a lot more popular. And of course, we're hearing about UFOs from the media and Pentagon, which I personally believe is a disinformation campaign of some sort. But that's a completely different show, but I think it's super important that we get the inside look from people who have experienced this phenomenon, because that's where we're going to get the truth from. That's where we're going to find out what is really going on with this from people like yourself who have experienced it. Now, like I said, it's been a while since we've had you on the other show. Could you remind the audience a little bit about how this all started for you?
Sure. I started having experiences when I was a kid. I think is so common for a lot of people that are contactees or experiencers. And that started with, you know, kind of waking up not in my bed and some type of a room where we were doing things with our mind. And it was kind of like telepathic exercises and psychokinetic exercises. And then not long after that, a year or two later now, I started getting visited by this individual who I thought was a kid at first, and then I saw him on a craft in about the sixth grade. So this kind of advanced, and especially when I say that, because it's a physical experiences and having meet somebody that is physical like that, and then going on, it graduated to what I call adult onset experiences, because I kind of had a lame time where not much happened between about the ages of 13 to about 17, and then it picked back up again. And again, these are physical encounters I'm talking about. And then that went on for years after that. And it kind of slowed down when I was right around 28, 30. And now it's like more of a telethought communication now that goes on. And I don't always see craft or wake up on craft or have them zoom up on me and then lose an hours of time like what happened before. You know, it's one thing, you know, that's why I say that. I mean this, no offense to anybody, but I know CE5 or whatever it's called, it's really big right now, calling in craft, and people will tell you that they're all experts and, oh, that's Pleiadians, those are Sirians, and we don't really know who's on those craft. And be very careful, because when those craft come too close and then suddenly you're missing, you know, hours of time, 4 or 5 hours of your life, and you know you've been in contact with something, you can still see it. You can see the beings, you can see the technology, but the longer you're away from the event horizon, the more it starts to fade. The retention of memory fades. I think that's quite common amongst contactees, experiencers, and that's why a lot of this occurs in the dream state, where we're halfway between them and us, where we can have this medium, I think, and then you don't get as sick as I was in physical encounters, because it's a different environment on board that craft. So, you know, it's just food for thought, if nothing else. You know what I mean? But there's a definite difference there in terms of astral experiences versus physical. I'd had those too. And I'm not discrediting anybody that has those, because for that reason, you won't get that sickness. You're in an energy body. It doesn't conform to the same physical parameters that this body does, so physical laws that this body does. So it's easier to meet them halfway, especially if you're dealing with beings from another galaxy or another universe or dimension. How much can they do a pattern of unfoldment into the third dimension here to meet us? So it takes some different things that start going on board some of these craft, and something that leads to what they have put in my mind is a temporal aphasia. It's a sickness that I think I talked about this last time we were on your other show. It's a sickness that comes on the craft that it feels like being on a merry-go-round or maybe seasick, but more than that, because it's hard to breathe in there to a degree, it's a little slightly different. It smelled to me like Windex, most of these craft do, and then, at least for me. And then that kind of makes it hard. You're getting telepathically bombarded, and that's because I was there physically. You know, but if I say, like, for say, the first experience I had when I was 17, and I'm seeing other people on this deck of this craft, and they're kind of translucent, like some of the beings themselves are translucent, which means they're in their dream body, and they're going to the edge of this deck and touching the light that comes off this engine, the living light. You know what I mean? And that's a whole nother thing we can go into later about really what these engines are, how some of them are built over what we call Makos or black holes, and really what they are, at least the ones I've been on board. So I don't want to go too far on any one side, but that's the way my experiences started. They started in childhood and they went on into adulthood. And I spent a lifetime trying to understand them because they weren't negative. And I know right now a hot topic is people in the SSP and what's happened to them, and a lot of trauma going on there. And I feel for those people. I'm actually trying to communicate with more of them. But my experiences weren't like that. They weren't government related. They weren't negative. They weren't sexual. They weren't attacks. Nothing like that. And I think I am a large part of the population that actually has had positive contact. But nobody's talking about it. That's just starting now. People like you. So I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad that people like yourself are talking about these experiences now. It's important to get all sides. You know, I'm sure those negative experiences do occur, and they're very traumatic for the individuals like you're talking about in the Secret Space Program. But these amazing, beautiful experiences occur too. And I, you know, since we had our conference that you were a presenter at a couple years ago, I had an experience myself, which was a very profound and beautiful experience too. So yeah, it's all part of this, and I think it's very important. Now, when did you come to an understanding this was extraterrestrials and not something like, you know? I mean, I think even though paranormal and ghosts are connected in some way to this this phenomenon, I don't know if it's the exact same thing. But when did you know that you were dealing with maybe off planet entities?
Well, There's experience that happened, and it's on my YouTube channel too. I actually did a video over it, but it's called, I call it the acid rain experience. I was in the sixth grade and I had woke up, but I don't sleep good, especially since those experiences, since childhood, I don't sleep very good. But I woke up on this craft, and this is a physical craft I'm on board, and there's like a monitor there, and I'm on this deck, and there's a being floating kind of over the deck plates to the right. And it's this being that had come to it just interacted with me a few times when I was at my house playing. He'd come up and played with me, and he was seen by some other people. So that tells you kind of what these beings can do to us on the conscious level, optically, what they can do through our optic nerves and make themselves appear a way that they may not be. Not just virtual reality, but through the optical nerves. So it's a conscious deal. You know what I mean? Because I didn't perceive, for whatever reason, I didn't perceive him the same way that I did on this craft. This being floating over the deck plates was an insectoid. And I want to be very specific about something. This was not a mantid, okay? The mantids are the things like that, and they're very commonly reported. This being looked more like a grasshopper with limbs that were a little bit more purported, were humanly purported, and it's a little bigger than I was, this being was, than at that age then. So this was not your typical mantid, all right? And then automatically, this being is giving me answers to my questions telepathically before I can form them. And when I had encountered him before, like let's say on the curb when I'm playing, he was talking telepathically too. And I didn't realize every kid couldn't do it. You know what I mean? I thought most just didn't. But he was telepathically communicating, but it was more normal, you know, back and forth, as opposed to on this craft. He was anticipating what I was about to ask and answering it before I could formulate the questions telepathically. That's a little disturbing. You know what I mean? But one of those questions is, where are you from? What the hell do you want? Yeah. I mean, let's keep it real, okay? Because when you're in the presence of a non-human, okay, seriously, what is it like? There's a lot of nerves that go on, fear, but there's something about the vibration that he was emitting that, and also this is somebody I knew that I'd played with, like, let's say outside of my front in my house, my brother's washing his car. I was trying to make these little mud dams on the curb to stop the water from flowing, like it's going to flood the world or something. And this individual came up, rode up on a bike and played with me and helped me make the dams. You know what I mean? And then for a little while, my brother had seen him. You know, I wasn't unsupervised. And then he took off. And I'd ask, like, where are you from? You don't go to my school. You go to the other one over across the creek. And he's, no, I'm just here visiting family. You know, is what he says telepathically. And this individual had on a hat and some odd, like, kitty cat sunglasses. So they looked, he looked a little odd, especially now as an adult. I would tell you, somebody that is not around people a lot, slightly off. But yet I wasn't perceiving him the way I perceived him on this craft as an insectoid. See what I mean? In this uniform, yeah. Definitely uniform that felt ancient and more scientific, this persona felt, you know? So my question was going to be, where are you from? And he says, you won't understand. Now, at that age, I thought I was very heavy because I was watching some Doctor Who and some Star Trek. So I was like, oh, yeah, lay it on me. You know, he says, go 900 million light years out beyond the exospace-time continuum. Well, that's right. I didn't know what that meant. So the next thing comes through is so you don't understand that. Start with the third and fourth planets past Pluto. Their bases for us to jump off of to go into your solar system to deal with the density. And at that time, I'm thinking, you know, even prematurely, like, am I being deceived? Because that was a long time ago, and there was no, I don't even know if Chiron, the Pluto's moon, had been found yet. So there was nothing else. Then go fast forward, I'm in my early 30s in my office, and they find something called, they discover something, trans-Neptunian objects, which is another Kuiper belt just outside of Pluto there, like spanning there. And they found several objects that are almost planetoids, and they've even named them. And I'm thinking, Lord, that's exactly what this individual was talking about. But anyway, going back to this acid rain experience, all right, I can see through this monitor several other craft, like two others. And it looks like they're sucking stuff up under them or something. It's like an odd light emitting out of them too. And we're over this, like, what looked like a snow range of some type, mountain range. I don't know where, you know what I mean? But I'm not seeing anything like that. So I thought it was quite beautiful. But these things are sucking that up. And he's telepathically telling me, we're trying to battle and help with the acid rain. The acid rains are very bad for your planet. And then he also went into some of the metals that were in the atmosphere and reasons why that's one of the densities. They won't come out those craft too often, you know. So I'm picking that up quite a bit. And in fact, microwaves and metals in the atmosphere, I call it the M&M effect. So that's what he was leading to. But anyway, acid rain, I never heard of that, all right? And, you know, it's so much of this wondering what's going on and trying to make sure you're not being deceived. About a week later in class, the teacher had us read this thing called the Scholastic News. And each Friday, somebody, lucky person, got to stand up there and read the main article. And this one I got chose. And this one was about the Statue of Liberty. That year they had closed it down because they were, at least parts of it anyway, because they were repainting it and repairing it from damage caused by acid rain. And that's, you know, when I heard that term, read it, I remember screaming it out a little bit. Everybody laughed like it was a joke, but it was because it had crossed over from what to me were physical night experiences to my day life, definitely. And there's no way I could prove any of that. But I mean, that's what happened. So that's the first thing that it told me, that what I was experiencing was definitely real. You know what I mean? You think it is, but until certain things cross into your daily consciousness, and until you start, for me, scientific, discoveries to start backing up what I found out years ago as a kid, you know, that's things that you can't.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I want to speak to the telepathic communication. In my experience that I had, it was the same exact thing. Like before I could even finish asking a question, the answer would be projected in my mind. It was like a kind of like a mix of image and emotion to portray language. And it was instantaneous. Like before I could even finish the whatever I'm asking or communicating. And it was also associated by this beautiful feeling of like love and unconditional acceptance, and just it was amazing. It was a great experience. So I can definitely attest to that telepathic communication thing. It's wonderful. And I even told the being, I was like, this is a great way to communicate, man. I wish I could talk like this all the time.
Yeah. you know when saying that and knowing that you've experienced that, doesn't make it kind of why, you know, somehow humanity doesn't exercise the communication of telepathy and it's dismissed as folklore.
Yes.
Because then we can't hide stuff. You know what I mean? We're going to be living more like Vulcans. We're going to be more logical, man.
Yes, man. It is.
That's
amazing.
Cool though. You know, real quick, I don't want to take us off subject or topic, but that type of telepathy that comes through with the star beings is so strong. You know what I mean? Especially when you're in the presence of one. I've been in different ones, like the mother of the hybrids, I called her. She was so telepathically strong that it seemed like she picked up my energy body and levitated it towards her as I'm there. Like she bi-located me in her presence. That is serious consciousness, man. I don't know anybody here that could do that.
Yeah,
you know, man. But I think that's one thing that's really, really important when dealing with that. Now, something that I'll just throw this in there, right? When I had went and spoke at that Esetti Ranch 3 years, 2016, 2017, and 2019. And in 2016, I had major experiences out there. I mean, I thought I was at a point in my life, not a young cat, but these things that just stopped my world, these experiences that stopped my world. I thought they were past me until I went out there. You know, I got blasted. But one of them was the Sasquatch thing or whatever's going on out there, man. And one night I'm coming back and I can't sleep. So I go out about 3 a.m. and I watch the UFOs come off the mountain and everything. And then go back about sunset, which is right around 4:30 up there. And then the feeling of being watched, Chris, from those trees out there. And I had to walk past this chicken coop to go down there. And I just had it. I turned off the light. I said, you know, I said it verbally. I threw it out telepathically. I said, look, I'm from the Midwest. And I said, I want to have these encounters. But the truth is that if one of you steps out of the trees on me, and you're 7-8 feet tall, I'm going to freak out. So I'm freak the F out. Excuse me. So just don't do it. All right. And I looked like a total idiot, man. I was standing there with the flashlight, you know, talking to myself and mentally doing it. So I go down, sit in this yurt, this cabin, and I'm sitting on the edge of this cabin. Maybe 5 minutes later, before I can fall asleep, I get hit with this telethought. And Chris, it's so strong. And it's things saying, it's coming with, I'm getting words, one thing, English words, but also the pictures, the telethought. And I'm getting things like, it's illegal for y'all to be seen by us anyway, so don't worry about that. And the name was Elder, and I don't have a limp. And I'm getting pictured in my mind, a Sasquatch, a like 11-foot albino Sasquatch doing a backflip, like David Lee Roth in the Jump video. You remember that video? At the very end of that video, he just does a backflip for no reason, like a ninja or something. Yeah, it was like a backflip like that. And that sounds so ridiculous, me telling you that, but I swear that's what I got. And then several things were relayed quickly, and then the channel was cut off. And I'm sitting on the edge of my bed there trying to force myself through like a tomorrow person or something. And, you know, it didn't work. Whatever that was, it was a much stronger telepath than I. It certainly didn't feel like an ape. Okay. I've been to the zoo. There's no telepathic communication from the gorillas there. They're cool to observe, but this was something else. Do I know it was Sasquatch? No. But if not, it's connecting itself with that phenomenon, definitely. And I'll leave it there.
Oh, man. You actually brought up something super interesting, because I've been kind of looking into Sasquatch and Bigfoot and having guests on that are Sasquatch, Bigfoot researchers. And this is so fascinating, because this is not, like you said, just some probably lost hominid or something like that. This is something much more. These beings have capabilities that we can't even imagine, according to some of the testimony and stories that I've heard from some of these researchers, and highly, highly intelligent. Like something extraterrestrial, maybe, possibly, or something that's been here the whole time that has, you know, had high intelligence or advanced capabilities that we just don't understand. I don't know.
You know, I just did an interview with a lady named Jessica Jones. She's really cool. And I met her at this conference I did about a year ago, the Starseed Conference. I think that's where I met you, but it wasn't. Sorry. Anyway, but she's a researcher on like three different teams, and she goes out there. They got equipment, and they go, you know, on site to these places and just do all this field investigation. And I had mentioned something she took interest in, that Fred Beck, the Ape Canyon encounter, where they're throwing the Sasquatch, they're throwing the rocks at the cabin and everything. Yeah. You know, we're left to think that that's kind of just all that was. But the truth is, that guy, Fred Beck, that shot one, had talked. He wrote a quick book that's like the I Fought the Ape Men of Mount St. Helens is the name of it. And it's a very quick little pamphlet. But, you know, he called them manifested beings. He said that there was a very definitely spiritual factor to them, paranormal factor to them. Everybody involved in that thought that. They would never shoot one. They'll never catch one or anything like that, because they're manifested beings. And why some of these tracks just disappear in the middle of fields and seem to go from to nowhere. Fascinating. You know what I mean? And just the thought of manifesting beings, that they can actually, when they're in the presence of the morphogenic field of people, then they become third dimensional. They start manifesting. And during that time, they have to actually conform to all physical parameters. That would be living scat, eating, all the things we do, until whatever happens, they get more away from people, or people aren't there, or something, that they become non-physical again. It's just fascinating. If nothing else, it's stuff for the mind, because there's something going on there, and we can't just come from the ape camp. Yeah. But there's so many different types of Sasquatch. I don't know where that begins and ends. You know, well, just food for thought, if nothing else.
For sure. And along those same lines of these mixing of phenomenon, you look at places like Skinwalker Ranch. Now they have the Meadow Place. Even, you know, Mount Shasta, like Gillian's Ranch, like you were talking about. All these different places are just like hubs of paranormal activity and extraterrestrial phenomenon. And it makes me wonder if it's the energy in the area, or if they're attracted to something, or if there's something else going on that causes this concentration of activity there.
I'll tell you what. Boy, you're taking this a different way. How cool. Man, okay, so I got so blown away the first year I spoke out there in 2016. Before I went in 2017, I did a professional regression for strictly what happened to me out there. I had to know more what I was dealing with. All right. And something I saw in this regression was this. I had a feeling I had like been in the mountain. The little I slept, like I was inside that mountain or something. So during the regression, I described this device, this crystalline Merkaba type of device inside that mountain that's actually scanning people's life memories, like this life, and then it will produce an orb of some type that gets in your energy field and does something to take your consciousness forward. And that's results in people seeing Sasquatch out there disappearing in the field. How many times have you heard that? You know what I mean? Especially at that place, or seeing certain UFOs or things like that. I think that's what it is. Everybody that has something happen to them, you know, they have something happen to them that takes their consciousness forward. So, okay, fast forward that 2 years from this, and this is just before I met him, is a gentleman, John Vervinko, that did a video called Remote Viewing the Ancient Aliens of the Aseti Ranch. And during this video, his team described this device inside the mountain, this crystalline device, what I had seen 2 years previous. So I couldn't wait to meet him and discuss that. And condensing this for people quickly, and I'll probably get off this topic, but
no, you're fine.
There is a book called The Keys of Enoch by J.J. Hertog. And I did a video about this while I was out on the ranch with John Vavinko. And it's on my YouTube channel under playlist Aseti Ranch. It's a video where we're sitting on the couch talking. But there's a book called The Keys of Enoch by J.J. Hertog. And in that book, there is a device they describe called, Or Station, O-R Station, after a group called the Benign Or, I believe. But anyway, they describe this device, and they, even in the back of that book in the glossary, they have it. You can look it up there. I give in that video the numbers, the pages it's on, and they actually show this device. They've got a schematic of it on there, or just an illustration, and they say what it does and how it does it. And that's fascinating. So that, taking it a step forward, all right, that year in 2019, I went out there. It was different. We had to lead Skywatch. All right, or is that 2017? One of those. Either way, we had to lead a Skywatch. Look, no offense to anybody, it's just not my thing.
Yeah.
Because when the ships come too close and you lose time, it's hard to suddenly blend back into society. It f's with your life. Sorry, messes with your life.
Yeah,
your life. You know. So I get a little bit nervous. You know. But this deal here, what I did was, since I had to lead one, fun. I first ever, but I did a pineal gland exercise, this pranayama, and it's a good one, all right, the most powerful one I've ever used. And what's cool is you've got about 100 people there in the room, you know, that are all, a lot of them are psychics, mediums at these conventions. The attendees are really the special people, but they all do this. Once I got over the how weird this looks and do it and have everybody do it, so many people, Chris, start saying the same thing, especially the strongest psychics of the room. They're saying, I'm seeing this grid. I'm seeing a grid. It looks like a tic-tac-toe board. Several of them kept saying it. And immediately I knew, it's this device. It's this device scanning people. Whatever how much the radius of it is, you know, and just anyway, I'll leave that alone. Anybody look on my channel, look at that video and that Aura Station. And the thing is, I think certain people like us, with certain DNA, certain energy, certain blood, whatever, man, you know, it actually opens it activates these devices. And consciously, I believe that's what happens. And, you know, it's a matter of how many of these devices, because I think they're from when we were type one civilization, type two, even in the past, Earth was, that was here. We still have many things that these devices, how many of them on Earth are still functioning? Maybe there's one at Kaligash, maybe there's one at Mount Shasta. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's food for thought, nothing else.
Yeah, that is so interesting. And that kind of leads me to think about a conversation that I was having with a couple of other UFO researchers in the past month about the possibility of what kind of energy these craft are using and the effects it has on the environment of wherever it's landing. Like, I heard a story of a man who had a farm, and he'd have craft land near his farm. Often he'd see them. They'd be, you know, they'd actually mess with or mutilate his cattle. But when they'd be appearing, he'd also have strange paranormal activity start happening in his house. He'd have like poltergeists and stuff. And then whenever they'd leave, this kind of energy residue would stay around for a few days and then it'd go back to normal, which I find very interesting, those kind of connections. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, the energy that I've seen on board craft, they've called it a few things. One of them is they've called it living light. They've called it AGLE before. And it's normally a deep golden color that I've seen. And it is life energy. And when I say that, it's the same as prana, chi, orgone. It's all the same, but it's some type of a creator consciousness that they've been able to polarize and use as energy, and it's in a light form. That I can say, and I've seen that. I can only speak, Chris, for the craft I've been on board, okay? But that's something I've seen being used by several engines. One of the engines I've seen, it looked like what's called now a buckyball or a like a gyrosphere.
Yeah.
And it had, and it made me kind of go into the honeycomb conjecture. Why do the bees use that hexagon to store energy? You know, and this is way before, this is what happened to me. Then again, you know, when I was a teenager, I saw this, man. So it's something that, you know, it never went away. But now I know that what that is one form, where sometimes you see these cubes that are on these craft also. And it becomes, if you're dealing really, truly with beings from another universe, entities from another universe that are coming through, okay, that you're dealing with, not just another galaxy, not just Pleiades, from another universe. And this universe is built on the spin, is based on the spin, all the way from our basic atoms, all the way to the galaxies are on the spin and the spiral. That's one of the main ways this universe is formed. So a different universe, what if they're using something like the square is based on the cube or the pyramid or amorphous metals or something like that? So then they have to come through a pattern of unfoldment to deal with us here. Okay. And what shapes can they use that could transfer this like life energy, this living light from one universe to the other? These cubes are one. The other one I just described, this buckyball that was in this type of a, I called it an engine, but the truth is I think it's more of a brain in reality, you know, brain energy source. And that's also why a lot of these craft, a lot of us have been on, you may have been involved in this too, that the craft, the crew themselves are giving a symbiotic connection with like their prana and their energy to actually power the ship. So they're not just crew members, they're not just navigators, they're power sources. You know what I mean? It's fascinating. And space itself, it's all just not what we're thinking. You know, I had to re-understand exactly what I was seeing when they're saying that this engine was grown over a black hole that led me to dealing with a gentleman by the day with the name of Rudy Shields had taken an interest in my experiences, and we started communicating quite a bit. And he especially had taken interest in the other universal aspect of what I was kind of dealing with, you know. But he has a new black hole theory, and that's based on all the data collected from the observatories that he dealt with. And he calls them MACOs, magnetically eternally collapsing objects, and how actually the MACO is inside of the black hole itself, but that's a mechanism that actually stores the information. And how actually all the information of the universe wraps around what looks like the accretion disk, but it actually wraps around that Mako. And that is what we would call the Akashic Records. That's the record of space and time. We've heard that so often, Akashic Records. I mean, everybody is accessing it now and teaching other people to do it and yada, yada. But truly, what is it? You know, so really, these black holes are the hard drives of the universe. They're not just, you know, they're not just these holes that suck everything in, like the movie when I was a kid, the black hole, everything sucks into it, crushes it. And that made, so a lot of what we've heard about them theoretically is not true compared to the data, you know, and that's important, you know, very important. So these MACOs are something completely different. And when dealing with, like, especially if you have a civilization, Chris, that might not even exist anymore, they can still exist within that Mako, the Akashic Records, and able to communicate with us through our brains. And that's heavy. And our brains, quickly, there's something in these black holes, what's been shown is that they operate more similar to the way our mirror neurons do. Okay. And mirror neurons are, we've got these, fibers that make up our entire body. Oh Lord, that's the name of it now. Anyway, they make up our entire body, but they make up our brain, and then they construct microtubules. Sorry, microtubules. And the brain microtubules occur two ways, concentrically or helical. Okay, and that's this universe. All right, so they respond to conscious waves. and there's conscious waves, brain waves, like mirror waves, mirror neurons, is the way these black holes are functioning. And when I say that, and I talk about the copy that's made, what they call the quantum hologram, also, everything that goes through the black hole or goes into it is actually the copies made on the surface of it. That's that Akashic Records. That's the quantum hologram. That's all that. So that's kind of where that's coming from. So that way, the way black holes will be able to be accessed is consciously. You wouldn't think that brain science would in any way connect to how black holes function. What? But that's what the data is showing. And mirror neurons is me talking to you now, talking to the people. They're able to see the experiences that I'm talking about. That's what the mirror neuron network does. It's also connected to the grab reflex deal, but also that's how these black holes are hard drives of the universe. Yeah, it's wow, pretty man. Heavy like that.
It is.
You know? Yeah.
Well, that's a lot to, we could go many different directions here, but I want to get your take on space, because I've had a few shows lately where my guests are questioning what space is, and I have this deep gut feeling that, of course, we've been lied to about a lot of things, almost everything that, you know, in our existence, really, if you look at some of the things that have come to light lately. But when it comes to outer space and our ability to traverse to space or to the moon like we supposedly have, doesn't seem like traditional rocketry would do it, especially from the images that we're getting from NASA. You know, some of these things, lunar landers covered in looks like tinfoil, and it, you know, some of the footage is just so questionably, you know, ridiculous. I don't know. So I'd like to get your take on what's going on there. Do you think we have actually been doing what NASA says we're doing, or are we doing it a little differently, maybe with our secret space program?
I think it's both. I think that NASA's a front for all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And what they've done, you know, even like what, if you go look at some of the stuff, like I think the gentleman's name is Ralph Ring, and some of the stuff that they were proposing a long time ago, even got patents for such a long time ago, and dealing with not just anti-gravity, but gravity modification, that's, you know, slightly different, but that's very serious. What happened to that? Where does the next step from that? You know, actual scientists that are actually dealing with real warp drives right now. You know, and that actually some of the theories behind that. And it's recently talking about space a little, you know, recently did a video on this too. And it's information that comes to me sometimes, these beings, it's dealing with what they call Fermi bubbles, which weren't discovered all that long ago. But, you know, that's a gamma ray bubble that is over every galaxy, including the Milky Way. And they're all connected in terms of right now we have a lot of gamma radiation in this galaxy from other galaxies. But if you're dealing with an advanced type, you know, 4 type 5 civilization that's dealing with something like the fungus I've mentioned before, the radiotropic fungus that grew on the walls of Chernobyl and also Fukushima, it's a black fungus that actually had a robot scrape it off. And what it does is uses its pure melanin to convert the gamma radiation into the growth cycle. And that's what Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby were doing. That's what Hulk does. Right. Sorry, I had to throw a joke in there. But seriously, it does convert gamma radiation into the growth cycle. And, you know, I've heard people that are talking about melanin dominant extraterrestrials saying that perhaps a type 5 civilization had sent that here as help with the radiation cleanup on this planet. And that we get more help than we think. And that's fascinating when you start looking into fungus. It's many ways shown as like McKinnon and other people can traverse in interstellar space. It's immune to solar radiation. Several types are. So if you're going to send a probe to another planet, like a Bracewell probe, you know what I mean? That makes contact like 2001, something like that. And looking scientifically at what's been developed, like the theory of, I don't want to mispronounce this gentleman's name, Alcubierre warp drive, which deals with pulling a bubble over the craft and stretching it and pulling the craft towards it. It's slightly different, but it's a different way of warp theory. Now, if you were going to take something like spores, fungal, and take them, get them somewhere else, wouldn't that be a great way to use the Alcubierre warp drive through these Fermi bubbles? But you see, we don't think about how a lot of civilizations might actually exist in space, especially on the organic aspect. And it's different. You know what I mean? Everything I've been on board was organic to a nature of these craft. Not fully, but they're very sentient to a point, Chris, that I underestimated how sentient these craft actually were. You know, I'm walking around on there unescorted. I mean, I'm so sick that I'm not going to be much of a threat to anybody anyway, but it's not even about that. But the ship knows you, knows your intent, and I think it knows you're not just soul life memories, your soul life memories, not just life memories, your soul life memories, which we don't have access to for the most part. It's really hard. I say this without going too far, and this will deal with your space deal also. One of my experiences that I've talked about is this craft. It seemed like a pure conscious craft at first until its unfoldment became fully physical. And one of the rooms on this craft, it was full of these little wormhole things or opening and closing really quick. And they're all over the place in there, Chris. I mean, there must have been probably, 20 of them. And I have this light beam, a ball of light that jumps in front of me, starts unfolding like a sunflower, and jumps into one of these wormholes and comes out of another one. I'm talking about a millisecond. And I'm picking up that we're like fish out of water in your dimension, in your density, we're like fish out of water. We have to be careful, things like that. And before, when I would be out like doing exercises late at night, the gate of power and stuff like that, trying these night exercises, I would see these blue flashes and these lights. And I never thought in a million years that those could possibly be non-corporeal extraterrestrials. Never. But they're going in and out of those wormholes just like that. That might have been very well what I was seeing. Anyway, this room, okay? And this is something that Rudy Shields had forced me to accept mathematically. He threw it all out. He said that this was a craft, and it makes sense that it's actually dealing with the path of most coherency to another universe. And that was the center for that. And he kept asking, were any of them stable? I said, they didn't seem like it to me. It seemed like many wormholes that aren't supposed to be stable. They were moving around, And he's saying, yeah, but that ship is able to choose that, which one it needs. And that's dealing with the universal aspect. And I had to deal with that because I couldn't say, no, it's just another galaxy. But no, it's a universal thing. So anyway, I'll shut up.
No, man, that was great.
Does that make sense, or was I being too weird and not making sense?
It makes sense, and it goes deep, but I think that it makes a lot of sense, and it gives a better understanding of what could possibly be going on with these technology and the ships. And what I want to get into right now is, what is their interest in us? These type possibly five civilizations, super highly advanced. What are they doing with us? Why are they interacting with us? And it seems like we could possibly be a part of an experiment. We could be a creation of theirs, maybe some of these species. I don't know. What do you think the interest or relationship with these entities are?
First thing is, I think you have such a multitude of entities that are interested in this place and interacting with it. And the ones that seem to get the main cream of the crop and the attention is the negatives. I mean, for a long time when I was trying to, find other things in the media way before I ever came forward, as a kid, trying to figure out other people who are having experiences like mine, I was never seeing these beings. I was never hearing these type of experiences. I was seeing tons of stuff about grays. And then later on, which I'd never seen. And then later on, a bunch of stuff about reptilians, and they're very interested in this place. They said, look at all these people that have been assaulted in their experiences and had this horrible trauma associated with their experience. And it's a lot of people. I was so shocked to see in the Free Foundation, what is it called now, CCRA, contact modalities, when they did that survey, how many, like out of 2,000, 2,500, I took that survey, contactee experiencers said they had positive contact opposed to negative. You expect to see something, it was so skewed towards the positive, it was unreal. I was shocked, because that's not what we hear about in the media. So I think it depends on the beings. Like, for the example, the ones I'm dealing with, there seem to be more interested in, one is we don't have access to our soul life memories here. It's an issue. And we're immortal souls to a degree with a lot of soul life experiences. That's like going from kindergarten to 12th grade, where you're graduating, but you can't remember kindergarten to 11th grade. What kind of crap is that? I mean, that's what this place is like. We don't have any access to our soul life memories. It's easy to get caught up in the cycle of reincarnation here. You know, my work has taken me into really dealing with earthbound spirits a lot and helping them cross over, the ones that are attached to people that you don't pick up on, even as a medium. You know, they're entwined in the person's behavior pattern. That's serious. And I had no idea that it was that. I can tell you now, in my opinion, through experience, I think the earthbound spirit population, like the Patrick Swayze's walking around in that movie Ghost, is just as numerous as the living. And that is a real issue here. So remembering who we are, the other places we may have been lineage-wise, is not even accessible to us. That's a problem for those of us that are having positive encounters. So a lot of it, and if we've once been like, okay, go geek on you, man, like Star Trek-wise, if we were once part of the Federation, or everybody talks about that, like Galactic Federation. Cat's idea what they'll call themselves that. But let's say, you know, whatever. No offense to those that do. You know, I'm not saying anything about it. No problem with it. But if we were once part of this Federation or any Federation like that, this would have been a place of galactic trade, where you might go outside and go down to your city building and see a couple of non-corporeal beings floating around. Mm. Or doing like sermons or things like that. It's not like that anymore. When these actually technologies that we're still wondering how they got here, like the Oort station we just talked about, or the pyramids, any of these things that show this was once a type one civilization. I think we're trying to go back to that. And that's the one thing that Star Trek may represent, is when we start getting back into part of the galactic trade and being part of that. So that's an interest to some of these beings too, you know, soul life memories, the planet itself, because I asked these beings I was dealing with, and they had told me that the Earth won't, what they had said, the Earth won't be destroyed again. And they're sending me visions of the Earth going around the sun looking like a burned up ash, kind of. They said that will never happen again. And we don't know how old the Earth truly is and what it's truly been through. You know, if you're a fan of Doctor Who like myself, there's one doctor that sticks out for me. The favorite for me when I grew up was Tom Baker. But, you know, the second one he did was called Ark in Space. And it was about, they landed on the space station that was the reservoir, the reserve of humanity was asleep there in cellular suspension, because there was a solar flare that destroyed Earth. Not destroy it, but just made it uninhabitable for, you know, I don't know, a million years or whatever. And it's just very interesting. And they talked about trying to repopulate the Earth. I think something similar to that has happened before. It's slightly differently, but I mean, there's been a destruction here. So the beings I dealt with are much more interested in the Earth. Before I shut this up, one of the beings, I got so many responses on the interviews I've done and at conferences from this being in particular. Most of them don't have names. This one gave me a name. Mana was his name. Very tall being. And it looked like it had a brain on the outside. And I know now it looks like brain coral. And, you know, and I wonder sometimes why some of these beings would come forward when I was younger, or, you know, in young adult years, and then suddenly they back off. Others may come forward, but they back off. Well, why? What is it that, you know, and I'm waking up thinking about this, Chris. And this is, you know, before I went to Australia and saw what a problem they're having with it. Bleaching coral. It's in my mind. What I start looking at that and what's really happened to the coral reef. And this being somehow connected to that, you know, and how it's being destroyed by global warming and a bunch of other things they're saying. That's real serious. And then that took me into something that's called super coral, which are these type of corals that they're making that is resistant to the bleaching effect. And I'm wondering to myself, why was Mana just this being not just dealing with me, but what its connection with the Earth matrix? And is that it? Does this species represent either the past or the future when coral becomes sentient and leaves? I mean, seriously, you know, people are tripping out on octopuses right now, and I'm taking a different way, and that's just new, too. I was watching that show, what was it, Resident Alien, man. I've been watching that. You know, he's supposed to be of octopus type of variety. Not from here, but they're supposed to be cousins in a way. His species is an octopus. And I just saw an Ancient Aliener talk about how octopuses are not from Earth and all this and that and things. Well, I think it goes a lot more than that. Things that have been planted here, experiments here. And you mentioned earlier, is this a laboratory? Chris, we have every sign of that. What is it with all these weird hominids and all these cryptids that just pop out of anywhere, jump into people's field of vision, and then are gone, of awareness, and then they're gone, and they're just stacked away into urban legend and folklore? That's been going on a long time here. Are those breeding experiments, and these creatures are taken? Like, what is this here? It's a very strange place. So anyway, that's. Yeah. I'm sorry, I probably didn't answer your question.
Man. No, that was great. You mentioned people being intertwined with non-corporeal or disembodied spirits. And that brings me to one of the last things I want to get into today is what could be misinterpreted as mental illness. I think a lot of extraterrestrial experiences, a lot of people who experience contact, with light beings or even malevolent beings are being mistaken as mental illness, and they're being given these pharmaceuticals to just kill out all whatever's happening in their brain. And of course it'll stop the experiences because it's probably destroying their brain as well. But I think that this is a thing that's happening with people who are being mislabeled as mentally ill. What do you think about that?
I would agree with that. The thing, first of all, really taking it into really auto-suggestion and how powerful auto-suggestion is, truly what the true hypnosis is, auto-suggestion and relaxation, okay? But auto-suggestion is so powerful. And on this situation, what you just talked about, if you even relay that you have experiences, you know, since I was much younger, before I ever came forward, I was obsessed with, I thought, probably 70% of the population that had some type of contact. And I found that to be true. But guess what? Nobody says it to each other. You don't talk about it. People see a Sasquatch, you don't tell nobody. Don't even tell your husband about it, your wife about it, because you don't want them to think you're crazy. That is a very powerful stigma. As powerful as, let's say, I know people that probably would be, I don't want to quote the religion, but I don't have religion, forgive me, but they would say they're a Christian because if they weren't, they might have to spend eternity shoveling sulfur into a pit with a pig horned demon stabbing them in the ass with a pitchfork for eternity. I mean, that's a powerful caricature, you know, enough to where a lot of people I talk to say, well, I just want Christianity because just in case.
Just in case.
Yep. I don't put anybody down, but I'm saying that is a powerful auto-suggestion. Yeah. And the same thing if you discuss any type of contact. But right now what's cool with, I think, not just the virus thing, but with the internet and communication that's changing. People are starting to talk a little bit more. And the next part of what you said, I think, is trying to filter out the fact that the truth is in this field, ufology and New Age, it attracts those that are delusional, that are mentally ill. It's like moth to a flame. Okay, so trying to use your discernment to find out who has really experienced something versus who's insane, liars, versus who was driven insane by their encounters. You know, it's a very...
And unfortunately, we also have people planted in this community to spread misinformation and give bad information too. So we got to watch out for that too.
Oh, and they always come in with the love and light thing.
Yes.
And they act like they're these gurus. Look, being a contactee does not mean you're a guru by any stretch. I'm not. I screw up all the time. You know, I eat pizza. I do a whole bunch of stuff wrong, man. So I'm not, you know, it's not even about that. And right now it's about being people and communicating and putting this tapestry together. You know, even to where I know some of the technologies I've been exposed to had been, the beings that told me that has been corrupted by lower vibrational entities to deceive people. So when I hear people, some of these people like SSP and things, I don't think it's all crap. You know what I mean? I think something like that's happening. And what better way than to generate a field of energy that suppresses people that would be having otherwise positive contact? All you got to do is saturate and train the brain with negative encounters to where, you know, it doesn't take much if you're dealing with a divine field and you're getting extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, whatever. And that's not, I think, the separate things we think it is, like you mentioned earlier, but we're getting that kind of contact. But instead, our brains are entrained with this grays, anal probes, yada, yada. And it actually messes up the experience. These may be positive beings, but we're strong enough to warp that into something negative. We do have a lot of power, you know, enough to where I can tell you we can walk away from the light at death. We cannot cross over and go away from the light, make it go away. You know, I just put something up recently, Chris, which was Patrick Swayze's Ghost movie. And there was one part, and I wanted to see it. It was playing on AMC, so I got to catch it. But it's when he actually dies. And, you know, he comes over and sees himself there. Demi Moore's crying. And all of a sudden, he goes to this panoramic life review. He's in his bed. She's looking at him. And then all of a sudden, he sees the light. And then he's back out on the street. And he starts going like this when he sees the light that's coming towards him. And he turned around and ran, and it went out. Probably not real quick, it went out. The spirits that were communicating with me that have crossed over through the people that they're inhabiting, okay, have told me that a lot. I ran from that light. Or one cat told me before, even this, the client's telling me this thing speaking to, so you didn't know I was here. And I'm not going to go in that light. I'm not going in that light. Why? Well, because I'm going to have to change there. And I did some things that it might be judgment. It could be hell, you know, things like that. So the fear of hell, once again, auto-suggestion, that's not to keep people earthbound. It's real serious. Or property, loved ones, not wanting to let them go. I mean, it's very easy to get caught here. Much easier than I thought, you know. So anyway, sorry, man. I feel like I'm going left on what you asked. But,
no, that was, but that yeah, was right on. Well, let's close on this as far as you know, what happens, life after death, why we shouldn't be afraid. You know, I believe that that reincarnation is a thing. I believe that we possibly have a choice whether we're coming here, going elsewhere, depending on certain circumstances. I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Do you think that indeed we are reincarnated? And what do you think? Do you think that we undergo a life review and actually have a choice to come back here or go somewhere else?
When I died, okay, I was in a car accident and I sustained 4 catastrophic traumatic brain injuries. Mm-hmm. And that was way after my encounters. So that was not, I was an adult when this happened, much older. And I saw loved ones when I had died. And I can say it was definitely, I'm sure it was them. It felt like them. Okay. And I think that I was able to meet them kind of halfway because I wasn't fully there either. You know what I mean? So that comes down to, I think, we have an ability, and some texts say that to reincarnate, come back, or to go on and go past and go more towards the creator. So I think the key is to having the last thoughts when you pass, and also your general intent is to go straight to the creator and bypass some of these levels and some of these reincarnation things. I mean, I care not to go through this again. I don't want to forget anything, or a lot of people don't want to go through this again. I mean, this is a very, I'm sorry, let's keep it real. This is a very hellish place. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous as hell down here, man. This is a dangerous place. It's hard to survive. It's trauma walks around like a member of the population, you know? So anyway, that's one thing. So I would say, try to have your intent, know how to focus and project your intent of will and your intent of will with love straight to the creator. Real quick, something that some of these earthbound spirits will tell me is that, you know, they first are talking about, they all consistently, each one of them, despite what they're able to perceive, despite the personality surviving, they say it's dark there. It's dark. And that's why they're latching on to other people, because these other people have light on them, you know? And something else is that, I start, you know, some of them won't want to talk about the creator, but they seem to forgot love. they seem to be people that in their life didn't have a lot of love, or they were disconnected from it. Then they cross over, and they, when you start getting them to perceive more love and think of love, and especially creator love, I hate to say God love, you know, this, and I say that unreligiously, I'm talking about spiritually. Okay. And then they start perceiving other beings in the room, whether it be angelics or loved ones. And I don't know if they were always there or if they can't seem to perceive them until they start feeling the love. So love is key. Love is key when we cross over. It's a big deal. You know, and when I, one thing I can say about mine, what I experienced, I was in a coma for over 2 weeks. Okay. When I came back, they said I'd be a vegetable the rest of my life, devoid of long time and past life memory, or short-term memories, anything but. I was very, very blessed, you know, but I could still see these angelics I encountered in my mind's eye. I still knew before I remembered who I was, I could still see my uncle and the people I saw that were family members when I was deceased. It was still in my mind's eye, you know, so I knew coming back, despite all that, the one thing I can tell you, the lesson I learned was I thought I was kind of spiritual. I lived by the golden rule. But man, I underestimated, Chris, the impact our relationships have on each other. That's what goes with us. I underestimated it to a degree, and I didn't think I did, but I mean, it's heavy. It's serious. Right on. So you express love to somebody, do it while you're in the body. You know what I mean? Don't go out like that. Don't cross over, not go when it's time. When you don't, when you go away from running from that light, you're running from the angelics that are trying to help, loved ones that are trying to help. You know, so I don't know how long it takes, but the light does go away and then they just stay here earthbound. And that's miserable. I think it's probably a type of hell. You're yelling at people, trying to get their attention. They don't even know you're there.
Yeah.
I heard that a lot too. You all ignore me. No, don't know you're there. You know, anyway, right. So I'll shut up from there.
No, man. That's,
does that answer that, bro?
Or? It does. And that's very deep stuff. And this was fantastic, Barry. We're going to have to do this again very soon. Thank you so much. And before you go, let people know where they can find you, website, social media, all that good stuff.
Sure. I've got a website, BarryLittleton.com, in need of major reconstruction, but it's still there. And there's some links there. I'm also on Facebook, but a lot of my work is on Patreon, but a lot on YouTube also. Barry Littleton on YouTube. I've been what they call shadow banned, so you have to get on there and subscribe and go through the playlist. Look at the playlist and hit that bell. So many people have told me that. So anyway, that's a big one. I've done a lot of stuff on YouTube. Got a lot of illustrations that have been done by Christine Dennett that you can see some of my experiences, and it'll make a little more sense. So.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much. That was fantastic.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, man.
A great conversation every time. We'll have to have you back on soon. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll talk again tomorrow.